Bethany Ann realized the base would be screwed if she didn't get back there. She had the new Nosferatu to take care of, however, and it had just gone into the water. Fuck. Agent John Grimes hated command decisions like this. He had three other agents for what he hoped was one Nosferatu. The guys back at the camp needed Bethany Ann for the oncoming ambush.
Go!
Bethany Ann stopped glaring at the water and looked at John with her red eyes and glistening fangs.
Go! This snot nugget we got! Help the team back at ops!
Bethany Ann grinned at him and suddenly disappeared.
Holy shit!
The other men were professional enough to continue watching their quarters and ignored his outburst.
Okay, guys, let's take this one down so she can take care of business.
Yeah, four of us against one Nosferatu. Bethany Ann against 12 Nosferatu. Seems fair.
Well, we wouldn't want her to think we gave her the easier task because she's a girl, right?
I wouldn't let her hear you say that.
Fuck no!
Bethany Ann arrived on the docks where she had originally boarded her boat. The command ops area was a battlefield. She could see two Nosferatu with so many holes in them that they should be down. One agent was dragged, screaming, back toward the weeds behind the tent, and the cargo van had four supernaturals beating on it. Calmly, she pulled her 45s.
Come try me, you eyeless soul cavity! Tom, how much energy?
The portaling took a little over half your energy.
I can't suck energy out of these creatures, can I?
Well, as a last resort, probably. Their nanocytes might cause you problems we don't need right now.
You got that fucking right.
Bethany Ann went into super speed and raced after the Nosferatu she had seen pulling the agent away. Eight of them from all over the camp tried to catch her while she went after him. Without breaking her stride, she jumped into the air and shot two of them, emptying her pistols, and twisted around before landing. At the corner, she could see the Nosferatu looking over his shoulder. The moment it realized she was coming for it, it dropped the agent's leg and turned toward her. It wasn't even a contest. Bethany Ann holstered her right pistol and grabbed her knife. She impaled the creature in the skull and used the knife to twist its head around as she ran past. The Nosferatu dropped to the ground like a rag doll.
Five down, six behind me, one missing, and my guys have another. Shit!
Finally, she spotted a sapling with a 3-inch diameter trunk. Perfect. She raced past the tree, punching it hard. It shattered and dropped, but she kept a hard pace to increase the distance a little. She needed them to follow her. She stopped and turned. She was about a mile from the tree. Waiting for the ravenous horde of Nosferatu, she stood there with her thumbs tucked into her belt. As they drew close, she raised her right hand and gave them the finger. Then, she disappeared. The Nosferatu went crazy with frustration. They ripped at the ground, trying to find a scent. 20 seconds later, all hell broke loose when Bethany Ann, her eyes glowing red, ran back on the same trail they had just come from with a 7-foot-long, 3-inch diameter pole. And tore into them, taking two Nosferatu heads clean off. It was 4 against 1 now. And she tossed the tree straight up 10 feet, pulled her reloaded pistols, shot two of them in their heads, and caught the tree as it came down. Grabbing it like a spear, she threw it into the chest of the Nosferatu on her right. Running at the last one, she dropped, slid under it, and grabbed its legs. It fell face first into the mud. She turned and jumped, kneeing the creature in its head and crushing it, spilling brain matter all over her right leg. The impaled Nosferatu tried to pull the tree out of its chest while Bethany Ann reloaded the last of her ammo. Calmly, she walked up to the struggling creature and blasted it into oblivion. She had one fully loaded pistol and one with only 3 rounds. With unknown energy reserves remaining, she couldn't teleport back to the command base through the etheric. Instead, she ran. Where was that last Nosferatu? John was second-guessing his decision to let Bethany Ann leave. The one Nosferatu had somehow turned into two, and they were playing with John and his team. They were completely screwed. That was when Eric upped the ante.
Come get me, you ginormous shit-eater! Hey, Spanky Love Nuts! You and your friend Queep Cookie over there!
Even just channeling Bethany Ann's spirit was galvanizing. The men gripped their rifles and closed any gaps.
On the count of three, Scott, I want you to keep fucktard number one over in the bushes busy. Eric, you and Daryl turn and let's try to light up douche canoe number two over here. If we get one down, we increase our chances of living 1,000,000%. 1, 2, 3!
Bethany Ann heard the staccato burst of gunfire shatter the quiet as she ran back to the command center. She feared she knew where the final Nosferatu had ended up. She raced to the campsite, trying to figure out a way to get to them. The John boats, even if they were currently anywhere near here, were too slow to help her reach them in time. Coming into the camp, she found the man she was looking for, one of the two medics Agent Boss had mentioned. Looking like a horror show with all the blood, guts, and brains on her, plus the intensity of her gaze as she feared for her team, it wasn't a surprise the medic was speechless.
Do you have any bagged blood? Look, snap out of it! Where is the blood? My team needs it!
Okay, technically she needed it to help her team, but the guy didn't seem like clarification would help him right then. He turned and pointed back to a van next to the bigger cargo van.
Over there, white insulated box. You can find it behind...
Bethany Ann ripped the van door off, grabbed the chest, and put it on the ground. She opened the lid and pulled 3 pouches of blood. Ignoring the people around her, she ripped the first bag open and drank. When she finished it, she threw it on the ground and started on the second. She was halfway done with it when she stunned the people watching her as she disappeared. The fight was violent. The men had wounded the second Nosferatu, but it allowed the one Scott was trying to distract to almost reach them before the men pulled together again. The Nosferatu, an old geezer when he'd been alive, but considerably more mobile and dangerous in his current state, feinted left and rushed off to the right. Daryl was unable to get a bead on him, and he cut across, pushing Daryl back into Eric behind him and grabbing John, who tried to get his gun on target. The Nosferatu grabbed his gun arm with both hands and broke it. Then he backhanded John with one hand, and with the other he grabbed John's knife and stabbed him hard, then tossed him. He landed over 10 feet away. Though he no longer had John to worry about, the Nosferatu didn't have a chance when all 3 of the team opened fire. The creature finally lost his footing and flew back onto the ground. Scott walked up and fired his pistol repeatedly, demolishing his head.
You two, finish off that one.
As Eric approached, he saw the knife was deeply embedded in John's right pectoral.
John, I gotta tell you, no more tattoos on your chest. They won't look good with the scar you're gonna have.
The knife had pierced his lung. They didn't have anything out there to help him, and he wouldn't make it back to the command center.
Have I told you lately? You're a real prick.
What did Bethany Ann tell you about lousy cussing, huh? She'll make you do 50 push-ups.
I don't know. Why don't we ask the little rectal hole dictator herself?
Eric turned around to see a thoroughly begrimed Bethany Ann behind him, holding 2 bags of blood, 1 full and 1 only half full.
So, you have to almost die to finally get the point. Is that it, John?
She knelt beside him.
Yeah, that white light has a way of focusing your creativity.
Do you trust me, John? I can heal you, but I can't explain. We don't have time. Will you trust me?
He looked up at her and realized he wasn't looking into a monster's eyes, but rather at hope, compassion, and concern wrapped in a package of blood and guts and the smell of gunpowder. Scott and Daryl kept watch over the area. You could hardly see farther than 10 feet without the flashlights. John nodded. Bethany Ann grabbed the knife in his chest.
John, I'm going to pull out the knife and cut my wrist. You have to suck as much of my blood as you can. Do you understand me?
John didn't open his eyes, but nodded again.
Eric, I need you to uncover that wound. Get the vest and his shirt ripped, or anything you can do to access it while he's taking my blood.
Will he turn into a vampire?
No, my blood will heal him. It would take a bunch more to turn him. Enough talk, let's get ready. 1, 2, 3.
She pulled the knife from his chest, slit her wrist, and pressed it to his mouth.
Time to do your part, John. Swallow some.
She had to cut it twice more because it kept healing on her. Eric was able to lift the vest off the wound and cut away his shirt with his own knife. John stopped sucking on her wrist and dropped his head back down and to the side. Bethany Ann slit her wrist one more time and let it drip into the hole in his chest, forcing it down with her finger. She lay back, willing it to work faster, then grabbed the full bag and drank it. The half-full bag had fallen over and spilled on the ground. A little overcome with the fighting, teleporting, and now bloodletting, she closed her eyes. Daryl, Eric, and Scott had pulled out their flashlights, and 2 pointed out into the Everglades. Eric watched in fascination as Bethany Ann's fangs disappeared while she slept, and then as the knife wound in his best friend and their team's leader closed up right in front of his eyes. Scott had been talking to the guys back in the ops center. It was still a major mess over there. Agent Boss had contacted Frank, who had inbound medical support and additional agency support for cleanup. No one at the little island knew what to tell them yet about John. If anyone found out what had gone on and John died, they feared what might happen to Bethany Ann. They decided to say they were getting John prepped and would be back in 30 minutes. 15 minutes later, John opened his eyes. He closed them quickly as Eric pointed his flashlight at him.
Ah, damn it, Eric. Shine that light out there where the bad guys are, for fuck's sake.
Good to hear your voice, you pain in the ass.
Eric moved the light to shine out into the Everglades.
Wouldn't want an alligator smelling all the blood and come for the buffet.
What happened?
Eric continued to train his attention on the undergrowth outside their circle.
From when? When did you black out?
Did I really drink blood from Bethany Ann? Am I going vampy, guys?
Yes and no. She promised it would only heal you. She said you had to drink a lot more to become a vampire. Although, considering her upgrades, it might be worth it.
Good point.
You got that right.
Scott and Daryl maintained a tense watch, looking out into the night. John stretched out his left arm and hit Bethany Ann's vest right where her left breast was. She didn't even open her eyes.
I just spent a lot of effort to heal you, Mr. Grimes. If you don't get your hand off my tit, I'm going to waste all of that effort when I kill you myself.
John moved his hand.
Well, what do I spend the points on if not to buy a quick feel?
John, I have a headache.
Bethany Ann finally realized what she'd said. John finally summoned enough energy to slide his vest back on.
God, Bethany Ann, couldn't you have at least taken my shirt off nicely?
John, you sniveling larva. It was Eric who wanted you so bad he ripped it off.
The two rested for another 5 minutes before she stood, reaching down to pull the massive agent John Grimes up without showing the least amount of strain. She cocked her head.
Incoming helicopter. Let's try to look like we're professional men.
Within 60 seconds, a black marine venom flew in. It landed 100 feet away, and two marines with flashlights on their weapons jumped out. The four men created a circle around Bethany Ann. There was no way they would let any misunderstandings occur on their watch. She might look like the monster Hell had kicked out, but this vampire, by God, was their vampire. They scrambled into the chopper, the two marines the last on, and one gave the signal. The black venom turned the lights off and lifted into the air, heading toward the ops center. Back at the ops center, Agent Dan Boss counted his lucky stars, which were plentiful in the sky above the Everglades. This op could have been a monumental disaster had it not been for Bethany Ann. Dan had no idea what she'd done exactly. Apparently, within a minute after the Nosferatu attacked, she had appeared and shot every single one. They'd also found two Nosferatu with their heads almost obliterated by huge bullet wounds. Another's head had been twisted around, and a large knife wound gaped in the forehead. Then, 3 miles outside of camp, they had discovered 6 more dead Nosferatu. According to the story doing the rounds, she had shown up and demanded blood from a medic, ripped off his van door, grabbed some, and drank it. Then she'd disappeared again. Shortly after, a shootout took place between Agent Grimes' group and something. The men had been cagey over the radio. Dan wasn't quite sure what went down. Dan watched as the helicopter landed about 35 yards away. John and Scott were the first two off, then Bethany Ann, and finally Eric and Daryl. They seemed to provide a security cordon around her, though he had no idea why until they got closer. Bethany Ann looked exhausted. She was also covered in blood and filth.
Ever touch my tit again, John? I will kick your nads from here to Miami. Are we clear?
John's vest was badly damaged, and though he had blood all over his chest, he still looked the freshest of them all. Like he'd just had a full night's sleep and a great breakfast. Oh, there was a story there.
Yes, ma'am.
The men let their rifles hang on their quick slings. John approached Dan.
Team Queen Bitch, reporting in.
Ow!
He grabbed his ear and turned around to look at Bethany Ann. She merely pointed at Scott, who rolled his eyes. Somehow, and he would have to figure out how, this woman had not only saved his command and helped kill at least 14 Nosferatu, but had also brought her team back alive. Regardless of the blood and damage to John's chest, everyone seemed in good health and spirits. Some other time, he wouldn't ruin anything with this woman tonight. New York City. Nathan let Ekaterina sleep off some of her jet lag. He left some bananas and apple juice on the counter for her. He didn't feel the effects of time changes when traveling as she did. Having done it a lot in his life, it was no longer a big deal. Taking care of business, he left messages for both Frank and Jerry. That done, he picked up more food from the corner store and carried the two bags of groceries home. He went a little heavy on the fruits and nuts. While he could call in for delivery of the major meals until they worked something out, he knew Ekaterina liked to snack on real food, so he got plenty. Once he'd dropped off the food in the kitchen, he went up to the second floor to catch up with the backlog of work for his security company and the other miscellaneous businesses he was involved in. Everything appeared to be okay, and he made ready for his 10:30 Skype call with the two managers at his security agency. The main topic of the meeting was the Guardian project, and both relayed that they were thankful for the help in implementing it across all their clients so fast. So far, the deal he'd struck with Frank seemed to be working out. In exchange for help finding and liaising with Bethany Ann, Frank conjured a veritable army of top-shelf network admins for the protection of Nathan's business under cyber attack. Since going to Europe, he had met and almost died for Ekaterina, the lady who, right now, slept downstairs. He knew she would go with Bethany Ann when she got back, but he hoped the vampire might stay away for a few more days. Maybe a couple of weeks? Or if he was devious, he could hack her airline reservations and keep changing them. While he wouldn't hesitate to pull that one on anybody else, knowing Bethany Ann's creativity when exacting her revenge, Nathan quickly dismissed that idea. No matter how you sliced it, though, Ekaterina was connected to Bethany Ann, and he was bound up with Ekaterina for sure. His ears picked up that the lady in question had just gotten out of bed. A couple of minutes later, he heard the shower start. He decided he would go upstairs and take another quick shower himself. While he hadn't sweated much that morning, he wouldn't take a chance. 10 minutes later, he came down dressed in jeans, a t-shirt, and a sweater, and carrying a black leather jacket for his trip to see Jerry. He caught Ekaterina digging through the fresh fruits and eating an apple. She smiled at him and covered her mouth with her hand as she chewed.
Good morning, Nathan.
A good morning to you too, sleepyhead.
What is this, sleepyhead? Is my hair messed up? I brushed it after my shower.
She patted her hair and turned to see if she could see anything in the reflection of the double oven.
No, Ekaterina. It means someone who was sleepy, who slept a long time.
Oh, so you think to already start on criticizing me on my first day here in America?
Oh, I...
Gotcha, Mr. Lol.
Man, he had forgotten the downsides to a relationship. The reality was that women had so many cards they could play, it was maddening. Then he drank in her smile and knew it didn't matter to him. He would take it all.
Before you get too far into that apple, would you like to have lunch? I have a meeting with Jerry. You can come too, or not, whatever you want to do.
She looked down at the mostly eaten apple, took the last bite, and gave him a thumbs up. On her way past him, she extended one finger, then went to her bedroom. Barely a minute later, she emerged, dressed for cool weather in a white jacket, blue shirt, jeans, and tennis shoes of a brand he didn't recognize.
Ready?
A lady who took only 1 minute to change? Priceless. He didn't want to do any driving, so he had called a taxi while she was changing. They sat and talked about different foods she might like to try while waiting for the taxi to show up. By the time they had decided on New York pizza, the cab had arrived.
You gotta bear in mind, New York pizza won't be like any pizza true Italians make.
I'm game. If it's pizza, then I'm there.
Excellent. That's why we're heading to Joe's Pizza in the West Village.
It was universally agreed that if someone was new in town, you took them to Joe's. They had the foundational New York pizza. Traffic slowed the trip considerably, and they arrived with healthy appetites. The pizza joint was little more than a hole in the wall of a brown brick building with a big white backlit sign declaring it to be Joe's Pizza. Inside, the room was narrow and long, with the pizza counter in the back past a few stand-up tables. They were extremely proud of their New York pizza fame, and their walls showed it. They were covered with pictures of both the famous and the not-so-famous enjoying themselves at Joe's. While New York was significantly dirtier than Brashov, Ekaterina didn't seem to mind. A couple of times he noticed she wrinkled her nose. He could understand that. Still, he appreciated that she didn't let a couple of things she didn't like ruin her experience. They reached the counter, and both ordered the two slice and a drink option. After their order came up,
number 41,
they had the extraordinary good luck to snag a couple of stools together in the counter seating area. He really liked the way her eyes lit up with pleasure as the deliciousness that was Joe's played like a violin in her mouth. Hey, Ma, look what I brought back from Romania. Can I keep her? His mom had passed away many years back, but he thought she would approve. They finished their pizza and spent some time walking around. Finally, he hailed a cab and gave the driver Jerry's address. It took too long, and yet didn't take long enough to reach Jerry's building. He exited the cab and held the door for Ekaterina, then closed it behind her. He had paid for the cab with his credit card en route. They walked into the building and up to the security podium. The guard took one look at Nathan and let him know he was good to go on up with a quick head bob.
What?
The security guard then did a double take at Ekaterina. Nathan decided she deserved two looks. If the guard took a third, however, he'd box the guy's ears. Jerry got up from behind his desk to give Nathan a huge hug and a couple of slaps on the back.
It's so damn good to see you again. Do you have any idea what a pain in the ass those people under you are? Never mind. Of course you do.
Together, Nathan and Jerry had a very agreeable working system. Jerry would stay in the top spot playing politics with everyone, and Nathan would make sure the pains in the asses in his personal pack didn't constantly annoy Jerry.
My sincerest apologies, my lady. I didn't notice you when I saw my good friend show up. My name is Jerry.
Nathan knew that couldn't be entirely true. Jerry had designed a passive friend-foe detection system wherein the air vents had been specifically directed to point the airflow down the hall and into his office. Ekaterina reached to shake his hand.
Hello, Jerry. It's nice to meet you. My name is Ekaterina Romanoff.
Jerry looked at Nathan, perplexed.
Jerry, Ekaterina is Bethany Ann's close friend and in her circle of trust. I brought her here to America because Bethany Ann wanted to remain in Romania to have a conversation with Michael's child, Stephen, before returning herself. Ekaterina is staying with me.
Nathan's claim on Ekaterina was not lost on Jerry. The guys in the pack had better treat her gently, or there'd be hell to pay.
Ekaterina, are you aware of Nathan's peculiarities?
You mean that he turns into what you call friendly pooch?
Why, yes. That he turns into a friendly pooch is exactly what I mean. Let's sit. Would you care for anything to drink, Ekaterina? Oh, yeah, Nathan, you too?
Nathan didn't miss Jerry's huge smile. Well, it wasn't like he had seriously expected to hide his affection for Ekaterina. But now she had called his wolf a friendly pooch. He wasn't sure if that was her lack of English skills, her deft handling of payback for the sleepyhead comment this morning, or something else. He went through the horrible scenarios in his head. How many assholes would he have to deal with before he got through this mess? He wanted to rub his face in frustration, but decided not to give Jerry another reason to gloat.
So, about that drink?
Jerry's office included not only his executive desk and business-like guest chairs facing it, but also a couch for less formal visits, and a fully stocked bar. What Nathan wanted was two fingers of whiskey, followed by three more, but he realized that was the frustration talking again.
Yeah. How about some water?
Water sounds great.
Grabbing two waters, Jerry gave one to Ekaterina and the other to Nathan, and while they sat down in the chairs in front of his desk, he walked around the huge thing and sat down. He looked at Nathan.
You have no idea how my life has sucked since you've been gone, my friend.
Yeah, actually, I do.
Nathan mentally bookmarked the negotiating edge he could use to make sure Ekaterina's little comment didn't go any further.
Let's get down to business without your woe is Jerry venting for the next 30 minutes. What about the troublemakers here? Does the council have any ideas?
Sadly, very few. Half of them want to wring their necks, while the other half feel the young need to vent their spleen and we should give them some time. They're too focused on the fact Michael is gone. So what are they going to do? Kill their own?
It was true the PAC Council handed out death sentences from time to time for heinous crimes against humanity, but not for merely talking smack. The vampires always handled the issue if they heard it in person. It was only when the PAC talked outside the unknown world and it got back to Michael's family that it became a problem. Of course, it almost always got back to Michael when Carl or someone filling his role was involved.
In those cases, a vampire would start executions. And the first the council would know about it was when they received frightened phone calls, often in the middle of the night, from the spouses or significant others, of the suddenly headless werewolves, occasionally even occurring right next to them in bed. Scary as hell. The problem was that the young had a really short attention span and believed they would live forever.
Jerry, if we don't get ahead of this problem, I'm afraid we'll have another Valentine's Day event.
Jerry knew Nathan wasn't pulling his leg, but he had a hard time understanding the enormity of it. He didn't want to remember the details of that day. There had been so much blood, and that bastard Michael had actually played with a couple of his personal friends by ripping their arms off before pinning them to the floor and allowing them to sort of grow together before doing it again. Unfortunately, what had happened was exactly the sort of thing he had warned the council about for 5 years before the slaughter happened. Jerry had felt like Noah must have in the Old Testament when everyone had laughed at him as the ark door closed, only to have them screaming during the flood. He could have tried to fight, but it would have been pointless. Someone would need to be available to pull the packs together to ensure this was the only retribution for the massive breach of Michael's honor the council had instigated. Why so many of his fellow alphas thought they could take Michael down had always confused Jerry. Even most of the seconds and thirds behind the fools followed their leaders, right into death. But to be worried that a new vamp could mete out such mayhem? It made no sense.
I can see your doubt, my friend, but trust me. When I first saw her walk into the bushes where I fought Algerian and one of his lackeys, I saw red-eyed death. When the other wolf jumped her, she caught him in the air. She didn't even stagger at the weight, Jerry. Then she watched us both as she pulled the wolf's head almost completely off and drank his blood as it sprayed everywhere. Then she simply stepped over the body and told the two of us to change. I obeyed, and that idiot Algerian decided he would go for my throat. He never had a chance. He had barely moved in my direction before she grabbed him, picked him up, and threw him down on the ground like it was nothing. He had to be at least 20 pounds heavier than me. Then she picked him up again and hit him on the back of the skull with her forearm to knock him out.
Why did she knock him out?
Questioning. She wanted answers out of him, which, by the way, she got, but not before he tried to come after me again. She caught him, and this time pinned his hand to the ground with my silver-laced bowie knife. When she had what she wanted, Alexei asked to finish the execution, an issue of personal honor. Even a 1,000-pound werebear was on his best behavior around her. She might be young, but do not underestimate her, Jerry. That lady is death walking when she wants to be.
Nathan could see. Jerry was still unconvinced.
Jerry, don't underestimate her.
Nathan, I get it. I trust you're telling me the truth, but I have half the council advocating strenuously to break from the strictures, and the other half wringing their hands. None of Michael's kids are talking to Frank, which means no one expects them to come over to the new world to deal with anything. They'll assume it's Bethany Ann's problem, and the rebellion group sees a great opportunity to be free again.
Jerry, I'll tell you what. If you decide to either do nothing or, God forbid, support this idiocy, then let me know. I'll get a Katarina and meet two tickets back to Romania and wait until the dust settles. Hell, Alexei would let us run over his mountain, I bet.
Jerry's eyes hardened. He had known Nathan for a long time, but there he was, announcing his intention to leave if trouble erupted. He almost said something he would regret when he realized he could be looking at himself 150 years before, trying to make the First Council understand that attacking Michael was death. He shook his head and leaned back in his chair.
I don't know why you two boys try to figure this out just by yourselves. Why don't you call Bethany Ann and ask her?
What? She'd talk to us about it?
Yeah, I didn't mention she wasn't going to kill Algerian because he was fighting. He signed his death sentence when he disobeyed her, not because he disobeyed something the strictures said. She doesn't always agree with Michael's rules. Ekaterina here is the first example. She didn't wipe any of the unknown world from her mind.
I was wondering.
Just like men, snort and beat your breast when just talking might solve it.
She reached into her white coat and pulled out her cell phone. Bethany Ann's speed dial went immediately to voicemail.
Hey, it's Katarina. Nathan has a small issue come up with the wares and the council, and he and...
She looked quickly at Jerry, who nodded his permission.
Jerry need to talk to you about some idiocy with younger wares. They need to know your opinion about something before all the stupid stuff starts. Give them or me a call. Hope it's going well with Steven.
She hung up and stared at them. Nathan looked relieved, and Jerry looked confused.
Tell me more about this business Bethany Ann has with Steven.
He's one of Michael's children, based in Romania. She went to track him down and have... what did she call it, Nathan? It started with a D?
She euphemistically called it a discussion. She went to lay down the law, and he would either get in line or she would kick his ass. And if that didn't work, she'd take him out.
Jerry clearly wanted more information about Steven, but Ekaterina felt protective of Bethany Ann's personal business, and she didn't feel they needed to butt in.
So the word euphemism is when you use one word for another you don't want to say in polite company?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Or you could use it as a joke, too.
I still don't translate jokes that well in English, but I will get better. I promised Bethany Ann I would work on my English, so I need to understand this euphemism better. Can you two help me?
She looked expectantly at the two men who had totally forgotten their big argument from a minute before and had moved on to upstage each other in explaining euphemisms.
Well, here's an example. Passed away instead of died.
Correctional facility instead of jail.
Letting someone go instead of fired.
Nathan raised his eye at Jerry as if to say, your turn.
Collateral damage instead of deaths.
Nice. Big boned instead of fat.
Ah, time challenged instead of late.
Sanitation engineer instead of garbage man.
Ekaterina noticed how, once again, you merely needed the right bait. They weren't fighting anymore. Plus, she was learning new things. Two birds, one stone. It was 10 o'clock that night when Frank finally had a chance to talk to Agent Boss alone in his DC office. His surprise growing as the facts unfolded. Bethany Ann was significantly more powerful than he had expected, even with Nathan's urging to take her seriously. She'd been picked up in Constanța, Romania, which meant she had probably met with Michael's child, Steven. He wondered how that went. Dan explained that she had not only handled the Nosferatu at the base, but somehow she'd managed to help her team who had taken out two on their own and in the open, with no fatalities. He then went on to explain how their story definitely did not add up.
Why's that?
John Grimes is my main team lead. She definitely made both him and his number one, Eric, comfortable before they even arrived. But something happened out on that little island in the Glades. When the five of them came off that chopper after the battle, the 14 members surrounded her like she was a princess and they were the guards. Mind you, she was in black battle fatigues, covered from head to toe in mud, blood, and gore, and looked exhausted, like she couldn't lift a pencil off the floor. Then John came up to me. His vest was completely mangled, had a big hole where a knife went through it. There was blood all over his chest, plus a little on his neck and chin. But he was walking like a champ. She did something out there to heal John.
So what's your problem with that?
Frank, don't be an ass. I realize I've been a dick about vampires for 15 years, and I own this one. She is one tough nut, and I mean that in a nice way. But what did she do out there? Will John stay human? Does she have some sort of connection with those men? Something that can make them do what she wants? Get this, as they get off the helicopter, I hear the end of a conversation where she tells John he better not touch her tit again, or she'll kick him in the privates all the way to Miami. Look, Frank, I'm not freaking out, and I can't tell you about other vampires. I'm good working with Bethany Ann. I just don't like surprises, and now I have to reevaluate my vampire prejudice. Give me something that says I'm not being mind-melded or whatever. I just want to know she's the real deal and isn't playing with my men and me.
Frank thought about that. Could she? Would she? He didn't know much about her except the facts in her dossier. Every bit of information, including that coming from the two guys he had over in Romania tracking down the stories, helped him create a picture of her. Just this morning, he finally tracked down a Porter Rutherford who had gone to the police to give a statement, and virtually vomited up all his crimes. They'd tracked him back to the same train she and Nathan were on. One of his crimes included trying to use Rohypnol on women. Apparently, he found one woman on whom it just wouldn't work.
Dan, I don't have an easy answer for you. My gut feeling says no. She wasn't anything like that before she was transformed. And from my research, vampires don't change their core personality. In fact, it usually accentuates it. One of the biggest concerns I have is Bethany Ann handing out too much vigilante justice in the course of her dealings. She hated unfairness, bullying, and cruelty before, and she surely won't allow it now.
Frank, I hear what you're saying. We're trying to keep this out of the public eye, and a bunch of feds with those big FBI letters on their jacket only draw the reporters. I get it. So, you're telling me you think she's the real deal? What you see is what you get?
Pretty much. Oh, I'm not suggesting you stop being polite, but if she's easygoing, then I wouldn't think it's all a ruse to get you off balance and then kill someone.
Hey, tell me what you think of this story.
Okay.
So Bethany Ann had been talking in the command tent, and as I walked out, I told Grimes to get her fatigues. Then I hear John practically yell at her, "Hey, fuckface, what kind of guns do you want?" Frank, you could have heard a pin drop. It got so quiet. I thought he'd lost his ever-loving mind.
And then?
She told him he had to do better than fuckface, or she'd make him get down and do 50 push-ups while she stood on top of him.
Huh. Well, that about confirms my guess that you have the real Bethany Ann with you. That being the case, you might advise the use of athletic cups to your manly men who don't know her well enough. If she catches a whiff of sexism from them, well, it's anyone's guess. She's put a few members of the Good Old Boys Network in the hospital, and that was before she was a vampire.
I don't think she'd get a chance to hurt anyone. These men love her and would probably beat the shit out of anyone who didn't treat her right, including their best friends. It's kinda scary.
So we're seeing a real charismatic leader here, huh?
You could say that.
Good. That helps me with another problem. I need someone to pick up the pieces on the American Council side. There being a bunch of chicken shits on one side and breastbeating nutcases on the other. Jerry's trying to decide what to do. Fortunately, Nathan is back and was supposed to talk to Jerry earlier today. I really hope they had a good conversation.
Well, me too. Werewolves and the other wares are nothing to sneeze at. I wish I had some on my team from time to time, but they keep telling me the rules won't allow it. They just won't tell me whose rules.
Probably Michael's. They wouldn't even admit that much because they fear him too much. That's part of the problem. They don't fear Bethany Ann enough.
Frank, if you saw what I did when her eyes glowed red and her fangs grew out of her mouth, well, let's say you'd get religion pretty quickly.
Good. Good to know. Now I just have to make a connection happen.
Yeah, you worry about that. I'll worry about what I got down here. You need anything from Bethany Ann?
No, I'll call her directly if I do.
Okay. I'm gonna see if she has anywhere to stay. If she doesn't, we'll get her a room with us to clean up and rest. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Frank was tired. He'd been up all day and monitored the takedown and the ambush as best he could. He needed to be more rested when he talked to Bethany Ann again. He closed his office down and went home. Bethany Ann washed her hair the next morning in her room at the Cambria Hotel in Florida City. Even after the washout in the Glades, she was a complete mess. She'd reached her room, taken a long hot shower, and scrubbed everywhere until her skin looked pink. Then she'd simply faded into the night on the bed. She finally got up when she couldn't take the sunlight through the window, having failed to close the drapes before she went to sleep. Now she felt better. The fight had been draining, but not too bad. She needed to remember, whenever possible, to keep blood on her when she went into battle. Her own healing potion. The problem with regular blood would be the limited amount of energy she could get from one bag and the type of protection she would need. If she could concentrate it into a smaller amount, maybe a vial, that'd be perfect.
Tom, have you got a moment?
Like I do much in here, Bethany Ann.
Give it a rest. I know you hit the computer from time to time.
Oh, well, I'm just trying to get the connection going.
You're doing an okay job. The headaches during your connection to the computer are only minor, and I appreciate that you leave me alone. It can't be too exciting to be a tag-along.
Actually, Bethany Ann, quite the opposite. Your adventures so far have been fascinating, and give me plenty to think about once they're over.
Glad to hear it. Listen, can you work on a problem? I need to see if we can bottle the etheric.
You mean like the blood?
Yes, only better. The amount of energy in a bag of blood is pretty substantial, but I can't carry 10 bags of blood into a fight.
What amount are you looking for?
They hadn't actually figured out what her max was, and only pulling from the etheric wasn't enough to reduce her need for food and water, and provided a constant, if small, amount of extra. But the amount of energy expended during a battle was stupefying. If the medic hadn't been there with the extra blood, John would be dead right now.
What about the same amount as 12 bags of blood, but something in a really small vial I can carry on my body?
I'll see what I can do. It's a good suggestion, but I don't have any ideas at the moment. Can I use the computer for this?
Bethany Ann grimaced. Anytime he truly used the organic computer embedded in her skull, her head hurt like a motherfucker.
Yeah, hold on. Let me see if I can get some pain medicine up in here first. We need to solve this problem. While you're digging around with the computer, see if you can figure out why it hurts me so much.
I'll do that.
Bethany Ann called down to the front desk and ordered up a healthy supply of pain relievers, grimacing a little at the upcharge out of pure habit. For a woman who had the wealth she had now, even the price of a Tesla was a rounding error. 5 minutes later, she received the medication and popped all 12. What helped and what was too much, Tom could deal with. She lay on the bed and waited for the pain. Tom didn't disappoint. On the bad side, the first 15 minutes hurt more than anything she'd felt in months. After that, it became bearable. And somewhere around 45 minutes into the process, she went to sleep. An hour and a half later, she woke up and felt good.
Tom, are you finished?
What? No, why?
I don't feel any pain.
Oh, I found the problem and was able to fix it.
What was it?
What was what?
What was the problem, Tom? Why did it hurt so much in the first place?
Well, there was a problem with the connections.
Tom, don't make me drag this out. What was the problem?
They were connected incorrectly.
So, you're saying you connected the computer to my mind wrong, right?
I did. It took me about 15 minutes to discern and about 30 minutes to fix. I'm sorry.
Bethany Ann was just as relieved the computer was online and no longer caused her any pain. It wasn't as though Tom had a manual on how to connect Kertherian organic computers to a human.
Apology accepted.
She might be resting, dude.
I'm telling you, she wants this delivery.
Her FedEx package. She jumped up and ran to open the door, grabbed the box, and slammed it shut before the two could even turn their heads. Thank God her clothes had made it there. She didn't care who had rerouted the clothes to the hotel. She wasn't going to question Providence. Getting changed in under 30 seconds, she opened the door and stepped into the hallway. John and Eric had already gotten three doors down the hall when they turned. Their expressions at seeing Bethany Ann in her fashionable clothes and high heels smiling at them were priceless. She twirled around.
You like?
Wow. I have no words to describe what I see, and like is completely inappropriate.
Eric simply grinned.
John, you're making me happy I saved your ass. Let's go to lunch on me. I'm starving. Get whoever wants to go, and we'll find a place.
No can do. Some of us are stuck here filling in reports. If the brass hear about us taking time to go eat somewhere far away, and there aren't any good steak places near here, it'll be our asses.
Hold on, you guys.
She walked back into her room and reemerged with her mobile. Bethany Ann looked up from her browser.
How is everyone with hot dogs and fresh-made hamburgers?
Almost the whole team was in the hotel's back parking lot. Half were already eating hot dogs, hamburgers, and Philly cheesesteak sandwiches, and munching down on chili cheese fries, and a couple had ordered gator balls. Bethany Ann sat under a tree nearby, enjoying her third Bronx Bomber sans onions. Scott and Eric waited in line.
Hey, tell me the truth. Were you there when she ordered the food?
Yes, why?
The queue moved forward a little.
They say she just told the man in a scary voice to show up and start feeding us.
Scott, you should know her better. She didn't do any scary voice. She negotiated with them, and they agreed. I have nothing else to say. I told you I wouldn't talk about her behind her back. Not even about this, buddy.
They reached the front of the line, and a man looked out of the serving window of the food truck.
Hey, buddy, I can tell you. We have a place over on South Dixie. Been there a few years. I get a phone call that asked me to come over with the truck, and I try to explain we don't move from our spot. She asked me if I would do it for some of America's finest, and I said, well, we could schedule it. She then asked me if she could schedule it in an hour for $25,000 before food costs. And I told her, well, I needed to get my truck fixed, so maybe I could stop by on the way, and here I am. So, you want a dog, a burger, or a sandwich?
Scott didn't answer quickly enough as he was processing the story, so Eric ordered a double-stack chili cheeseburger and gator balls. He looked at Scott.
You snooze, you lose, you poser.
Bethany Ann was finally full again, and all the guys seemed to be recovering. They were all professionals, but facing your mortality pulled the rug out from under your feet a little. She pulled out her phone and realized she'd had it set to Do Not Disturb and had missed a couple of calls.
Hey, Bethany Ann. I've been instructing Steven on the technology. It's going well. Could you give me a call back sometime when you have a moment?
After Ivan's message came another from his sister. Ekaterina wanted Bethany Ann to call Nathan or Jerry and talk to them about some wear issues. First, she checked the time in Romania, about 7 p.m. She dialed Ivan.
Bethany Ann, good to hear your voice. I take it things are fine in the States?
Good here at the moment, Ivan. Got a happy belly full of food and feeling sassy in my brand new designer shoes. What's up?
Well, nothing special. Steven is a fast learner. I was concerned when you told me he knew nothing at all. Most times, not knowing something similar makes it harder for a person to catch on quickly.
Treat him well, Ivan. He's a good guy. And I think he might be very important to me in the future. Also, stay close to him. I don't want you outside without his protection while you're there. I don't know that anyone is watching, but I don't want to take any chances with you.
No worries.
Good. Where is Steven?
One second.
She could hear him walk through the house.
Steven?
Yes?
Shit! Steven, you have to stop sneaking up on me!
She could almost imagine the vampire jumping out of the shadows to have fun at Ivan's expense.
But Ivan, it's the most fun I've had in 10 years.
That's because you've been asleep for 10 years. Bethany Ann is on the phone.
Why didn't you say that first? Hello, my queen.
Hello, Steven. How are you doing?
I am beyond enjoying myself again. I'm learning this new technology, and with the bagged blood, I'm dropping years each day. It is amazing.
Steven, will I have a little baby boy when I get back to Europe?
No, Bethany Ann. I have never regenerated younger than when I was turned.
When was that?
25.
Bethany Ann tried to imagine what he would look like in his 20s, and came up with nothing.
I'm sure you're a handsome rogue, Steven, but no biting on the first date, understand?
My queen, how could you think of me like that?
Because I know guys, you cad. Now, I need you to tell me straight. Are you up to contacting and working with the Pack Council there in Europe for me? I'm not talking about where they call you and kiss the vampire ground you walk on, but actually roll up your sleeves and work with them as equals? Well, okay. Let's not go too far right now. Mostly equals?
Of course, my queen. You have but to tell me what to do, and I will make it happen.
Great. I was hoping you still felt that way. Do you have a way to contact them, or do I need to get you the info?
I'm sure I have a way to do this. There is a pack near here. You don't need to get your hands dirty. I will take care of it.
Okay. She loved a good subordinate who wasn't a cranky bitch. She was glad she never had herself as a subordinate. She probably owed her old boss Martin about 1,000 apologies.
Thanks, Steven. Hey, did you get the room ready?
Of course. I did it the first night. Why, are you ready to use it?
No, not yet. I'm working on it.
You're working on it?
Stop interrupting! I'm talking here!
More like you're lying here, but go on.
Well, it is ready for you anytime.
Great. Keep Ivan safe, okay?
I'll do that. And Bethany Ann, thank you.
For what?
For calling and talking to me. It confirms what I knew that first night. You care about your relationships. I'll not fail you.
I know, Steven. Keep learning and touch base with the council. Make sure they aren't suffering from wanting to change the rules too much right now. Bye.
L'arrivedere.
With the whole Steven situation going so well, Europe seemed like it might be in hand. She certainly hoped so, because America seemed to be under attack. Time to call Nathan.
Hey, what's up?
Thanks for calling, Bethany Ann. You got Ekaterina's message?
Yes. She said you guys have problems and need my input.
More like serious issues, and we're looking for a solution without it becoming a bloodbath.
Considering you're asking me, should I wonder if I'll want to create the bath?
That's about it in one. Where are you? Did you finish with Steven yet? And did you leave him in peace or pieces?
You won't believe the story, which I'll tell you later. But he's turned out to be a great guy. I'm here in Florida at the moment, hanging with Frank's team. We had an op last night, so I crashed at their hotel. I should be good to come up there if you need me.
No, we can wait a few days. In fact, that might be best. Let me talk to Jerry again and plan this carefully. I'd prefer we ambush all the troublemakers and let them make fools of themselves. We'd probably cause another Valentine's Day massacre. Wares tend not to make good decisions when confronted. We're kind of a hot-headed lot.
I hadn't noticed during our altercation in Brashov, Nathan.
Yeah, okay. Let Jerry and me think about how to make it happen, and we'll get back to you when we have a couple of ideas. I really appreciate you working with us, Bethany Ann.
No problem, Nathan. Take care of my girl, okay? I'll be up there in a day or two.
Please, take a vacation. I'm sure you're tired after all your efforts. Why don't you relax for an extra month or so?
If I was going to do that, I'd simply get a ticket for Ekaterina to come down here this evening.
My mistake. See you in a couple days.
Yeah. Say hi to Ekaterina for me. Bye.
Bye.
Now that she had everything taken care of, she tried to think of what to do for a couple of days. She needed to get to know the team better, and she was there, right after a good op. It'd be dumb to leave right away. Maybe a party at a bowling alley? She needed to get dressed in something a little more casual, and she needed transportation. Good thing she had the internet in her hand.